Hey, everybody. What the fuck day is it today? Tuesday,
Yeah, it's Tuesday.
I think.
We saw Ed Wood last night for like the 100th time.
Yeah.
Shit was
Well,
awesome.
because I decided, I mean, for these live matinees, yeah, usually we try to do like a new or a new-ish movie. But then I was like, dude, we have this huge pile of movies that people have sent us. So Sophie sent us this one. And I was just kind of like, and we only do one movie retrospective a week. And sometimes we watch an old movie and we want to talk about that, but I don't want to have to wait for like the Patreon vote to come out. So I was like, let's just say fuck it and we'll just talk about whatever.
A lot of younger people have never seen this movie.
This came
This
out.
came out the year I got out of the service. And
Yeah.
shit, fucking Saad up in Saudi Arabia, I asked him, he'd never seen this movie. I told him about it. He goes, okay, I'll put it on the list. I gotta see it. But yeah, it's a good movie. It's a fucking masterpiece about the legendary Ed Wood, which he is a Hollywood legend.
Oh yeah.
It's supposed to be based upon things that really happened and a lot of stories from that crowd of people that knew him and were working with him. Of course, this is all, nothing is canonical when it comes to Hollywood legend or in Hollywood lore. But I think in general, my understanding is that in general, this movie is close to the truth. It's pretty much how it went.
Well, what Tim Burton has said, and I should note, I actually didn't know this, but Tim Burton was not the original director for this. I think Michael Lehman, the guy that did Heathers, I think he was the original director, but then he had to drop out because he had to do something else. And Tim Burton didn't write this, but when he got his hands on the script, he, and I don't think I've ever heard of this happening, when he read the script, which was like the first draft, he's like, don't change anything. I love it the way it is. Because the two guys that wrote it were like film students, and they had been wanting to make like an Ed Wood, like a documentary about his life because they were big fans of his. And I think that so what Tim Burton said that he did was that he read the script, he read some books about him, and he read his letters. And he's like, what I wanted to do is not make a straight up biopic. I didn't want to go into like all the dark side of his life and all that other kind of stuff, like some of the shit that happened later on. But I think he had kind of a drinking problem and whatnot. He's like, I wanted this to be from as though you were seeing it through Ed Wood's eyes. He's like, because his letters come across as he never talks about anything negative in his letters. He's always very upbeat and he seems very genuine and everything is like kind of heartfelt. So he wanted to make like a more sympathetic portrayal that still had some, aspect of realism to it. You know what I mean? And he's like, plus I didn't want to like shit on the guy because everybody had been doing that like his whole entire life and oh, he's the worst director of all time and blah blah blah. And he's like, that just wasn't anything that interested him, He's like, I don't want to pile on. And he's like, and he just seemed like such an enthusiastic dude, like from his letters and stuff, that he wanted that the movie to portray that.
Yeah, the story isn't about him being the best director in the world or anything. It's not about the direction. It's about him as a man and that whole scene and all those friends and how they got along and their problems and everything, Bella and fucking Mela Nirmi, also known as Vampyra, and then like Ed's girlfriends and wives and just the other people that were, part of his crew, jumping fences to try to steal shit out of fucking studio lots. And it's just,
Yeah,
an
it's just
interesting fucking scene,
I liked
Bunch of
this.
losers
Yeah, well, I
trying to.
liked this for the same reason that I liked Dolomite Is My Name, because I really like movies about just a scrappy bunch of misfits that are just that kind of pull it all together. You know what I mean?
They weren't losers. They were underdogs.
Yeah,
They
that's
were
what I mean. That's what I like
underdogs
about it.
trying to make something, and trying to get some success and get some status and recognition for, their craft. And it's a wild story. Fucking. And the Blu-ray that we have has some deleted scenes and stuff that was cut out, and unfortunately it was cut out
Yeah, there's not
because
a lot in there,
not a
but
lot, but should have been left in there a little bit more about Lugosi and how Lugosi was telling Ed that he fucked up by recasting his girlfriend and casting this new chick in her
that he thought
role
had money.
that he thought had money. And he gives him some good advice. He goes, Eddie. He goes, it's not the, it's it, it's not the mistakes in life that haunts you. It's not the mistakes and the failures in life that haunt you. It's the what ifs, the unknowns that haunt you. And he goes, like, what if I had done this? And he tells the tale that, what was it, Hungary?
Yeah.
Invited him to go back to Hungary and it with a make him like the head of Hungarian culture or the minister of culture.
Yeah, I think that's what they
would have had a bunch of money and a nice big house. And he goes, but I didn't go because I was afraid it might be a trick.
Yeah,
maybe that they would make because I'm Hungary's most famous immigrant, and maybe they would. Maybe they would take me and send me to prison and make an example of me for fleeing Hungary. And he goes, but maybe, you know, because I don't know, maybe it would have been that.
Maybe it would have worked out.
Maybe it would have been worked out. Maybe I'd be living in a big house with a whole bunch of money. And he goes, it's always stuff like that that makes you wonder. And, you know, showed some cool shit, you know, fucking Ed. Bella almost committing suicide and trying to get Ed to go with him, you know, and then he's like, oh, I'm sorry.
It would be wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. It's in the afterlife. We will never have to worry about getting work.
The thing that, like I said, I love this movie so much. And they, too, like, I think Tim Burton, this might be one of his, like, more personal films because it's not real Tim Burton-y.
No.
You know what I mean? He wanted it to look very straightforward, be very character-based. He did insist on it being in black and white, which is why Columbia was like, because Columbia Pictures was supposed to do it. And then he's like, no, it has to be in black and white. And they were like, yeah, no, we don't really want to do that.
Big mistake.
So that's what he ended up having to go to Disney. Disney's Touchstone put it out. Well, the thing about it is it didn't make money. It cost $18 million to make because Disney's like, hey, $18 million, that's like a piss in the bucket. So they didn't think it was that big a risk. I think it only made $6 million at the box office.
Yeah, the movie's legendary.
But yeah, I think over the years it was a cult classic. Got a couple of Academy Awards. Martin Landau got the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor for playing Bela Lugosi, because rightfully so, because watching this movie, you forget that that's an actor playing Bela Lugosi.
Yeah.
You think that that actually is Bela Lugosi. He's just so fucking good at it. Rick Baker got an effect, too, for the makeup effects.
Artistically, the doing it in black and white was the correct thing to do.
This, I mean, I can't imagine watching this in color.
Wouldn't have worked in
color. I don't think it would have worked at all.
No. Wouldn't have worked in color. And the movie probably should not have been made. If you were looking at it from just a dollar and cents.
That's what the writers said, too. They said, we wanted to make this movie so bad, but it's like, this just seems like the kind of movie that wouldn't get made. So the fact that it got made, and is kind of,
it should have never been made in the United States. I mean, a country like Sweden maybe would have fucking made something like this. You know what I mean?
If they know who Ed Wood is in
state
Sweden.
Funds.
They probably do. Probably not as much as here. Yeah. But now that's the thing. If you live somewhere, if you don't know who Ed Wood is or have never seen an Ed Wood movie or don't really know that much about him.
Context, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I guess you can still enjoy the movie because it's still really funny and it's like you don't. But I just kind of feel like you have a greater appreciation for it if you've actually seen the actual movies that they're talking about.
I think the reason why. Well, yeah, I don't think you have to know the movies, but knowing the movies helped.
It really enriches
I grew
the experience.
Up in California, and they played these on the fucking Saturday matinee, monster matinees, Ed Wood movies all the time. You know.
Yeah.
There was going to be, you know, at least one a month probably, because I think the monster matinee played two movies, and it was all the black and white bullshit from that era. I don't know why. Probably because he didn't have to pay any royalties to show it.
Well, yeah, because probably a lot of them were public domain or they were super cheap.
Yeah, and I can remember Plan 9 from Outer Space. I can remember Bride of the Atom.
Yeah, or Bride of the Monster.
Bride of the Monster.
That was on Mystery Bride Science Theater, actually. I think it might have been season 4.
All that, you know, hunted like an animal and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Hunted.
Yeah, yeah.
Despised.
Despised.
But they even made like Mystery Science Theater jokes about him saying like invented his own race of people. They always say race of people because that's
race of people.
A race of atomic supermen.
Yeah. What was funny when you watched these as a kid is that they did have atmosphere. You did have the atmosphere that you did have the feeling that you were watching something scary, but nothing ever scary happened in them.
No.
It's just that you had the feeling that you were watching a scary movie. But like I said, nothing scary happened.
That's kind
But you don't notice that when
you're
a kid.
Not scary, but an incredible simulation.
Well, there'd always be like rain and lightning and the fucking, and you know what I mean? Like the credits on the intro and then the credits on the outro, you know, the end credits, the music and the fonts. It was like you seeing some scary shit, but nothing scary ever happened.
No.
But you didn't notice that when you were a kid.
That's true.
Just you going through it, you know, and Bella, you know, talking about his racer people, you know, fucking, you know, that was enough. You know, oh yeah, I survived that one. I got through that scary movie. What's the next scary movie? I remember that shit.
Yeah. I mean, I have the Ed Wood box set that has, it has a documentary about him, and then it has Plan 9 from Outer Space. It has Glenn or Glenda. It has Bride of the Monster, and it has one other one. I can't remember what the other one was. Maybe it was, shit, no, I can't remember. He made like a shit ton of movies. I mean, the thing about it is that the reason that I love this movie is, as I said, yes, some of the stuff is not entirely accurate, but I just really love the heartfelt. I mean, this is just such a warm and fuzzy type of movie. It just makes me feel all warm and fuzzy inside.
Yeah.
Because it's just kind of like this gang of misfits in the 1950s trying to get these like crappy movies made. And fucking Johnny Depp plays Ed Wood to like perfection.
Yeah.
I mean, he just captures that kind of childlike sense of wonderment. You know what I mean? And it's like, we were kind of talking about this the other day, where it's like, I think that he actually did. I don't know if he was necessarily thought he was making good movies. I think maybe he did, but.
No, he was getting in arguments and he didn't want to take second takes. And he knew they were crap. He was under the influence of bad advice, I think. Because some of those studios said, no, we want it shot in 4 days. We don't give a shit. And this, you know, just get the movie done. It's got to be done quickly. And I think that's how he thought all movies should be done.
Yeah, maybe he thought he was doing it right.
Yeah, he's doing it right because you could get it done in 4 days.
So you had to do everything in like one take. You didn't have any permits or anything like that.
Well, the one take thing, I think, had a lot to do with what cost of what film was.
Yeah.
Okay, he probably only had enough film. You know what I mean? He might have only had 4 hours of film. Or three hours of film.
He's like, we can't waste it.
So we can't waste it. We can't do second shots. We don't have enough film. And that's probably what it was. They didn't have any money.
True.
And you know, he was trying to pay people. And he was trying to pay people with money he didn't have.
Yeah.
So, no, he didn't have the money to do other takes.
And like I said, I feel like he was really at heart, like a good-hearted dude. I mean, the thing about it, what I was going to say, and I think I forgot to go into this because I was going in that direction. But the thing about it is that, yes, Ed Wood and Bela Lugosi were friends, were close friends before Bela Lugosi died. I think the relationship between them is more based on the relationship between Tim Burton and Vincent Price. Hmm. You know what I mean? Because it kind of gave me that's like the same kind of vibe. You know what I'm saying? Because Tim Burton met Vincent Price and then he got to work with him and he was like his idol and everything. And so he was kind of like channeling some of that into the relationship. But I do genuinely feel like he felt bad for Bella and he wanted to put Bella in movies because he felt bad for him and because he wasn't working anymore. And so he was going to try his damnedest to do that, even though no one really wanted to see a movie with Bela Lugosi anymore because he was old and he'd been a drug addict for a long time at that point.
Well, he couldn't keep up a work schedule. He was weak. He's weak and real frail. They said that.
Yeah, he was 74, I think.
Yeah. Which, that's not really weak and frail by today's standards if you're healthy. I mean, no, what's his name? Jack Nicholson's 80-something.
Yeah.
And that dude's still fucking
strong. We have a lot of actors that are still in their 70s and 80s and are still working.
Yeah, he's retired, but there's rumors that he wants to come out of retirement to do a Joker movie. His old Joker, you know, from the Joker from the 80, from the 80s. They might do a Joker movie, his version of the Joker. Put him in charge. Because I don't know if you guys know, but Jack Nicholson loved that character. He loved being the Joker.
Well, the Joker seemed like it would be a really fun character to play.
And the other Jokers that came after him, he evidently like was not real approving. He liked the Heath Ledger one okay, but he thought his Joker was better. So he might come out of retirement just to prove everybody that his Joker was the fucking best Joker.
Yeah. He's going to drop his nuts.
He might drop his nuts. And evidently, you know, that Joker movie, he liked it, but he didn't think that was a good portrayal of the Joker. But, you know, it's all opinion. It's all ego.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, the newer Joker movie, that was trying to do a different thing than like a pure comic book adaptation. That was like a more gritty, realistic type of...
Yeah, it was like a sort of Scorsese.
Yeah, it was more like that.
But that still doesn't matter. Jack Nicholson evidently wasn't too approving of it.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
His Joker was better.
He's one dude.
That motherfucker might come out of retirement and do his version of the Joker.
Out of the way, kids.
Yeah, I'm going to show you how to Joker. He's 80.
I'll show you how to Joker.
Yeah, now, Grandpa's asked me if Bela Lugosi's Dracula was the first gothic character. No, I'd have to say the somnambulist from that movie, Casket of Dr. Caligari.
I was going to say a lot of silent movies.
Never silent movies.
Yeah. What was that, 1922, 1923, something like that?
It was done in a real Bauhaus style, you know, it had real good sets. It was a silent movie, real long, not interesting by today's standards, kind of boring, but the imagery was really good in it. And no, I'd say he was probably pretty goth.
And I'm telling you right now that I saw a silent adaptation of The Fall of the House of Usher from 1921, I want to say.
Yeah.
And one of the characters in that straight up looked like Susie Sue. Mm. So, you know, had all the black makeup and the...
Yeah.
Because I feel like the silent era, I think that was where like a lot of the goth look came from.
Yeah, I think so too.
Like the eye makeup.
Heavy eye makeup and
stuff.
Yeah.
Because that's what they had, like in the, you know, in the silent movie era, that's kind of what everybody looked like with all the heavy makeup and everything.
All the clothes being kind of black and white.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That just reminded me of like, because I'm trying to think of all my favorite scenes from Ed Wood, the movie. And there are so many, like pretty much the whole thing is my favorite scene. But I just thought of that when you said about the black and white movies. And there's that one scene where Loretta is holding up the two dresses. It's like, which dress you want better? And he asks like the cameraman or the cinematographer or whatever. And he's like, which one's the green one? I can't tell. And he's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, I mean, I can't tell the difference. I'm colorblind.
Yeah, just the dark gray one.
But I kind of like the dark gray one. Yeah. So it's like his fucking cameraman and shit. Like that was fucking
Speaking of the Joker and goth stuff, the Joker, actually, that character, Cesar Romero's version, and I think the comic book character too, was based on, I think it was a silent movie about a serial
Yeah, the man who laughs.
The man who laughs. And if you see photographs of that guy, it looks just like the Joker.
That's it. That's actually a good flick.
Yeah.
Conrad Veidt, I think, is in that. I saw that one, and he's in another one called The Hands of Orlok, which is also really good.
Good.
1920s, from the 1920s.
Yeah.
But yeah. So if you see pictures, and I've actually seen pictures of that, of The Man Who Laughs, like out of context, because I don't know if people know that that's from a movie.
Yeah.
But that's where the guy that drew the Joker, like, or drew that character, that's where he got the idea from.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize how incomplete the catalog is when it comes to movies, especially the silent era. A lot of them are gone. We have the titles, but they just don't have the movies anymore.
They got lost. Well, as I said, because a lot of them were on that silver nitrate stock and they just fucking spontaneously combusted.
Yep. And there's no original version of Phantom of the Opera. I think they have about 3 or 4 versions and all of them are just re-edits and rehashes of other versions of that movie. They kept putting it together. Because that movie came out during a time at the end of silent movies, at the beginning of talkies. So it started off as silent film. And then they had 2 or 3 versions of the silent film. And then they converted over to talkie. And they evidently smashed the silent versions together and redid some shit and added some stuff. But other things were lost. Most of the versions of Phantom of the Opera all fucked up. It starts with a scene with a guy in a cave talking, but you can't hear what he's saying. There's no audio for it.
Yeah.
And it was some kind of monologue that started the thing. Nobody knows what the monologue was. It's weird. And then they ended up colorizing it too. I think in a weird primitive color, like a hand done color.
Yeah, they used to do that back in the day. Because I saw a silent movie, shit, man, which one was it? I think it was The Red Spectre. And it's kind of like one of those real early, like what they call trick movies. It's like, it doesn't have a plot as such. It's not narrative, but it's almost kind of like if you went to see a stage show and there was like magicians. So it was like all these like camera tricks that they did. And they had that. And at one point there was, I'm pretty sure it was The Red Spectre, but there was kind of like all these jars with like these little tiny women in them. And then like the whole thing goes red. And I think that back in the day, I think maybe, I don't know if they had to paint the film stock or if they just had like some kind of filter they had to lay over it. I think they had to paint it. Well, did they not?
Yeah, I think it was painted by hand.
Yeah, I think it was.
The but you can go on YouTube and see a bunch of handmade documentaries or user made documentaries trying to get down to the bottom of what the original Phantom of the Opera movie was. They're not really sure.
Yeah. And Louis is pointing out too that London After Midnight is probably the most famous Lost movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other ones too. Like I said, I saw one that was Russian and I think it's called The Portrait or something like that. And I think there's only 6 or 8 minutes of it is all that's left. And it seemed like really intriguing. You know what I mean? It's like this guy and he finds like a painting of a creed old dude in a like a thrift shop or something. And he takes it home and then like the guy starts like popping out of the painting and stuff. And I would have liked to have seen that whole movie, but unfortunately.
It's weird. You can't track down what history was like when all the people involved were dead.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even know who to ask. They're all dead.
Yeah. So much stuff is lost.
It's gone. And then kind of a subject kind of on the side of this, Dr. Carrier was talking about Roman history, how it's the same way with Roman history. We don't know what the level of technology was. Anything that would have given us a peek into what their level of technology was that over the centuries erased by the church. They wouldn't allow certain discussions of natural science and things. You know, not all at once. It's just a process of elimination.
Yeah.
Every 100 years, a certain amount of books got destroyed because it mentioned atheism or atheistic ideas from ancient Rome and natural science. A lot of that shit, 300 BC might have been damn near industrial, right? Like pre-industrial society, you know what I mean? Like 1800s.
Yeah, there's...
We don't know.
There's really no way of knowing.
It seems to be more advanced than we give it credit for.
That's true.
And there's no way of knowing. It's weird.
Yeah.
So long ago, there's no way of knowing. Weird.
But yeah, so, all right. So let's get back to talking about Ed Wood.
Yeah.
All right. So a lot of the things that I love about this movie, like I said, I don't know. I'd be interested to know if somebody that had never seen an actual Ed Wood movie and then watched this one, is it as entertaining? Like, what did you think of it? You know what I mean? Because as I said, I don't think you need to, but it really does help because, you know, it kind of goes from scene to scene. I think it starts out in the early 50s, right? Where he just has this, you know, he's doing this play and it's terrible. And then they kind of go into how he got to direct Glenn or Glenda, which was his first film. Because he's a transvestite. I don't know if, you know, everybody here probably knows that, but I didn't know if anybody knew that. So the scene with him and that producer, George Weiss, like in the office, because George Weiss is like, oh, we want to make a movie about the Christine Jorgensen story, who was like a, you know, a trans person in the 50s who was trying to get a gender reassignment. And so they wanted to make a movie called that, but then they didn't get the rights, so they just had to call it I Changed My Sex. So then Ed Wood was like, hey, I'm a transvestite, so I'm like the person that should do that. And then he turns it into Glenn or Glenda, which was almost kind of like, Ed Wood was really kind of ahead of his time because the movie that he made doesn't make a goddamn bit of sense because he had met Bela Lugosi just by chance.
Yeah.
And so he wanted to put Bela Lugosi in the movie. Yeah. So he makes Bela Lugosi just like this puppet master kind of character.
Yeah, like in a wraparound story.
Like in a wraparound story. Yeah. He's like, pull the string, pull it. You know what I mean? So he has all that going on. It has fuck all to do with the rest of it. There's all this crazy like stock footage in there of like buffaloes running and like people. And it just, it doesn't make
artillery
any sense.
Attacks. And shit blowing up.
And Ed Wood is in it himself and he's, you know, and he plays Glenn and Glenda. So it's almost kind of like a quasi documentary about transvesticism and about like acceptance for it, which like I said, that's very ahead of its time. This was like the early 50s that he made this.
Yeah. Yeah. It was funny because he was, Ed was a veteran. All right.
Yeah. He was in World War II.
He was, he was a paratrooper of some sort. I don't know which division he was from. And he was fighting the Japanese. He was on the island of Peleliu, which is, if memory serves, it was Peleliu. I think it was. And, which was one of the most savage fucking battles of all times. That was the one where they were running around fucking cutting people's heads off. And guys were putting enemy heads on around their fighting positions. It's on top of the jeeps. It was slaughter on both sides. They killed them all. They killed basically all the Japanese on the island. It was like a fucking regiment of them. Anyway, he was on that. And he claims that he was on that attack wearing fucking women's underwear underneath his uniform.
Yeah, and they say, and he says that in the movie too. He tells George Weiss that.
He wasn't afraid of getting killed. He was afraid of getting wounded. And that the medics fucking tearing his clothes off and finding he had a bra and panties on.
Yeah. He says that in the movie.
Yeah.
And that is the story. That's how the story goes. That's, he used to tell that story.
Yeah. And he grew up with this because his mother dressed him up as a girl when he was a little kid.
And he was kind of
into it. Because he wanted a daughter.
Yeah.
And I think it was kind of a comforting thing. And when he was under stress, he would go back to putting on female clothing. I think it chilled him out.
Yeah, because, they show that a lot in this movie, too. Yeah. Like, every time he gets upset about something.
Yeah,
like
he's directing in Angora and shit.
Like, you know, like, when he has to do Plan 9 from Outer Space, he has to get that money from the Baptists. You know what I mean? The church. And they're like, that's a whole funny thing. Like, they're trying to interfere and stuff because it's their money. They all have to get baptized and all this other kind of shit. But they're kind of trying, hey, we need to put this guy in the movie. And hey, we can't call it Grave Robbers from Outer Space, which is what it was supposed to be called. And he was just getting like so fucking stressed out about it. And he goes in the other room and puts on like the Angora sweater and the wig and the pumps and everything like that. Yeah. And then he's
all. And you know, the guys that worked with him are like, are you gay? You know, and he's like, no, I'm all man. I like women. It's just, you know, when I'm upset, I get. So when he was under, he was a dude who he had this little quirk, and when he was under pressure, he wanted to put on women's clothes, and it fucking reminded him of being with his mom, being a boy with his mom, probably kind of like, what do you call it? Infantilism, probably, like a retreat into infantilism. That's what
maybe. I don't know if it's so much that it was just something that he associated with
comfort,
safety, or comfort.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a retreat into infantilism. It's about the same thing.
Okay. Yeah,
comfort. You know, going back to the womb is what basically.
Oracle says, "Hey, cross-dressing sounds a lot better than some options for dealing with stress." Yeah. Right? I mean, if everybody could just do that when they were, that would be like much better.
So when he was making this movie, he was trying to. And you can see it in the movie Ed Wood. He's trying to bring about public awareness that people that did this were not bad people. They just had this issue.
Yeah. And so, like I said, he was way ahead of his time in that regard. Yeah. It's a terrible movie and it doesn't make a goddamn bit of sense. It
doesn't make any sense, though.
And you can tell that it's autobiographical.
Right.
You know, he's writing he actually kind of wrote it to sort of, I don't know how close to the truth this is, but to sort of sideways, like, tell his girlfriend at the time, Dolores Fuller, that he was a transvestite because she didn't know.
Yeah.
So that was like his offhand way because he was too scared to tell her directly.
Yeah. Now, here's another weird aspect about fucking Ed. Ed was fucking, he was super patriotic. He would have been kind of considered to be right wing by today's standards, I think. You know, he was fucking all about America. Apple pie, red, white, and blue, and Chevrolet, and wearing Angora sweaters, and being a transvestite. That was all part of fucking the freedoms of being American. And in these wraparound stories, you know, he's always talking about the authorities. He deferred to authority and government authority a lot. It was just part of his nature. I think it's because coming out of World War II, the guys were very much oriented towards nation and government authority. And even the dialogue in the movies, I can remember him as a kid, and they talked about him here in the movies. They're always talking about how the authorities have now discovered that you are speaking the truth. So now everything's official. So everything had to, he had weird ways where if he wanted to talk about a subject that was kind of taboo.
Like pornography.
He had to look at it from the point of view of the authorities.
Yeah.
The authorities don't like this, so we're going to talk about it.
And that means they can show it.
Yeah, and that way you can show it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is what he did in The Sinister Urge.
Yeah.
Which, like I said, I kind of feel like he makes the movie. It's kind of a way of having your cake and eating it, too. Is that you can show a movie with all of these kind of, like, salacious shit in there. Although, from today's standard, The Sinister Urge is, it's just, like, chicks in baggy swimsuits. It's not pornography. But you can show that. But you can also, like, tisk at it at the same time.
Yeah, you can tisk at it. But he also, from what I remember, he played games with that.
That's what I'm saying.
That it was a way of getting around. You could tell that he didn't really think it was a problem.
No, of course not.
He didn't think it was a problem.
He was just trying to get around
shit.
But
he had to kind of, he was constantly trying to put little caveats. Yeah, this porn's going on. the government doesn't like it and you need to protect yourself from it. But let's talk more about porn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, the whole,
let's talk more about
the porn. Whole basis of the Sinister Urge was that the porn was making this one guy who was, you know, an assistant to the woman that was producing the porn was making him essentially a serial killer.
Yeah. Which is, there's
seriously, see the Sinister Urge. Yeah. That one was on MST as well. Right. And the woman that runs the porn ring is amazing. Yeah. I love her and I love her outfits. She is just the craziest. She's like one of those, you know, like back in the day when they had those, like the women, they were like hard drinking and hard smoking. And she always wore like super, super fancy, like shiny prom dresses. Yep. And she kind of talked like that. And fucking, it was so awesome. Yep. I was like, she's like my spirit animal. I love that. I want to be. But yeah, so watch the Mystery Science Theater episode because it's like delightful. But that movie is fucking crazy.
I just think it was funny that Ed was always worried about what the authorities' point of view and society, and
he was trying to make some educational shit.
Yeah, he was trying to make it educational. But you could also, I could also sense that he was trying to butter up people too.
Like, yeah,
this ain't no big deal.
Yeah,
just because the authorities say it's, you know, porn does not make serial killers. Quite the opposite. That releases a lot of fucking
tension
off of people.
Yeah, I think it's the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, there is data showing that as soon as the internet became widespread, crime fucking started to fucking fall through the fucking floor. The crime rate declined. And it was because people fucking fight on the internet instead of fighting face-to-face.
Which, like I said, I'd rather not.
So you're now kind of releasing a lot of pressure. And same thing with porn. The availability of porn, sexual assaults went down. Didn't go up, went down.
Well, and especially nowadays, because you can find pretty much whatever your kink is. You can find that, and you don't have to go anywhere to get it. You can just sit on your couch.
Incels and shit that are sexually frustrated, they're too busy beating off. They don't have the energy left. They don't have the energy left.
Take a moment to appreciate? I mean, because obviously, Johnny Depp is amazing in this. Obviously, Martin Landau is fucking amazing in this as Bela Lugosi. Like I said, I saw this in the theater when it came out because I was super into Ed Wood movies and all that kind of stuff. So I saw it in the theater when it came out. I guess not a lot of people did, sadly. But, you know, Martin Landau, amazing. I kept forgetting that wasn't actually Bela Lugosi. Can we take a moment to appreciate Bill Murray as Bunny Breckenridge? Because it's a small role, but holy fucking shit. I mean, just his fucking delivery, the facial expression. I mean, Bill Murray's fucking rad anyway, but just when they're all at that fucking, the fucking church service before they all get baptized, because they all have to get baptized so the Baptists will pay for the movie. And they're all sitting in the back and, you know, Bela Lugosi has died and they are putting this dude who's a chiropractor of, you know, Ed's girlfriend at the time, Kathy. And they're putting him in the movie, but he doesn't look anything like Bela Lugosi, and he's like way taller than him and all this other kind of shit. So it's like he has to put something over his face so you can't show his face. And then, so he's trying to do the voice like in the back of the pew, you know, trying to be like, I'll suck your blood or whatever. And then Bill Murray like turns to him and goes, let's hear you call Boris Karloff a cop.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, all these fucking funny inside jokes from the fucking all the friends. Another thing that was cool is that they added a scene where Ed meets Orson Welles.
Yeah, Oracle just brought that up. Vincent D'Onofrio plays him.
Yeah, and I don't know if that happened in real life.
No, it didn't.
It didn't? It sounded kind of contrived.
Yeah, it didn't.
But it's in there because a guy like Ed Wood would have fucking probably worshipped Orson Welles because...
Yeah, he was...
They had a lot in common in certain ways.
Yeah.
They were both kind of independent outside the studio system. They could write, direct, and fucking produce their own movies and bring them to market with their own money. Although Orson Welles, I think, only did that once or maybe twice. I don't think he did it. But Citizen Kane was made that way.
He was 26 years old.
Yeah, which is like, you know.
And after that, everybody was like, oh, okay.
It's supposed to be a masterpiece. So. I've never seen it, but it's supposed to be a masterpiece.
Yeah.
So... Ed would have wanted to see himself like a Orson Welles type figure, but Ed just didn't. Ed didn't have the talent. But
no, sadly.
Yeah, he didn't. But he had the drive. He wanted to be, you know. I think a lot of what Ed Wood did is just because he wanted to be active. He wanted to be in movies, and he was surrounded himself with a bunch of other people that wanted to be in movies and wanted to work, but really they weren't getting any work. You know, this is the only work that they could get. And this is a way of being Hollywood adjacent.
Yeah.
You could say, I'm a director, you know. You know, you know, yeah. Or you don't, not a director for a big studio, you know, but you're an independent director. So that's what I think it was about. And he got into this with Bad Habits, according to the movie. The bad habit of trying to shoot a movie in 4 days. Fucking terrible.
Of not knowing much about the technical aspects, yeah, of how to shoot a film.
Yeah, or how to write scripts.
Yeah.
Or how to write dialogue. He didn't pay attention to detail. He just wrote the shit up fast and let's do it. It'll be fine. The kids won't notice. It's like that.
That's basically what he said. I mean, There's one scene at the end where they're shooting Plan 9 from Outer Space, and Tor Johnson, played by George the Animal Steel in the movie, he gets stuck coming out of the grave because he's so big. And like the two guys playing cops have to come and like help him out of the thing. And He's just like, it's fine. We're not doing another take. We'll just leave it.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's, you can see it if you watch the actual Plan 9 from Outer Space. I mean, you can see like the gravestones are obviously cardboard. You know, Tor Johnson, like, walks into the wall, like when he's going through the door at one point, you can tell it's just like a cardboard, like a set, you know what I mean? Like he runs his elbow into the, or his shoulder into the door. Like you can tell shit like that. And they just didn't fix it.
Tor Johnson was great though in fucking the Land That Time Forgot. Remember that British movie?
That's right.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten.
The evil samurai. It's almost kind of like a Conan movie in a certain way.
He was
the
in some
U-boat commander.
A fucking
Nazi U-boat ends up kind of like in a hollow earth type situation where it's still primitive times. I need to see that one again.
That's a good movie. I like that movie a lot.
Yeah.
Well, Tor Johnson was in some other shit too. Yeah. He was in, goddamn, what was that Coleman Francis movie that was also on? Beast of Yucca Flats.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was also. And I would argue that Coleman Francis movies are way worse than Ed Wood movies. Because Coleman Francis movies, I think he only made three, and they were all on Mystery Science Theater. It was Beast of Yucca Flats, The Skydivers, and Red Zone Cuba. But his movies are kind of boring. Ed Wood's movies are not boring. Not at all. They're just so bad. Like, the dialogue is so batshit, and it's just so fun, like, watching these ridiculously cheap sets, like, you know, like UFO is obviously made of like paper plates, you know, an airplane thing that's obviously just like two chairs with like a piece of wood
tons of stock footage that just doesn't fucking
make sense. Fucking great.
Buffaloes just running by and fucking, you know, like,
so, you know,
army footage, them fucking shooting fucking artillery shells off, that, you know, and you're like, what the, where is this? We're back in Korea? You know, supposed to be California, but it's obviously fucking footage from Korean War. It's fucking funny.
I mean, he did the one, okay, so when they were doing the end of Bride of the Monster, where Dr. Voronoff gets eaten by the octopus, because, and he only had that idea because there was stock footage of an octopus and he wanted to use it. So he's like, well, we need some, you know, footage of above ground, like not underwater, to match with the octopus footage. So they went into this other studio, they broke in and they stole the octopus, but they didn't take the motor. So it just kind of sat there. So it just sits there in the thing. And then it's like a night shoot and poor Bela Lugosi in the movie, he's just kind of like, well, we don't have the motor and the arms don't move. So you just have to like lay there in the middle of it and like pull the arms around and make it look like he's killing you. Yeah. And it's like this freezing cold water, like in the middle of the night.
Some of the stuff that he did, you know, it kind of made sense in the context of the time.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, his first job with Glenn or Glenda, he's working for a studio that just makes shit, basically.
Yeah, they just make shit movies. And they know they make shit movies. They just make exploitation movies.
Right. And they straight up tell him, look, we don't give a fuck. You just have to be competent. It has to be a fucking movie. It has to be, what, 7 reels long. It has to be, you have to shoot the bitch in 4 days for as little as money as possible. and we'll sell this piece of shit to the theater.
Yeah, because they already had a poster and stuff.
The poster came before the movies.
Well, because it's like, you know, when he meets with George Weiss at the beginning, and he's just like, do you have a script? And George's like, fuck no. Right. Got a poster, though.
And, you know, this is 50s.
Yeah.
Okay, late 50s. And not everybody had a television set.
That's true. It was still expensive. Fairly early 50s, yeah.
And what was on TV wasn't any good. It was usually like live variety shows. So they weren't movies. Sometimes they would replay old movies, but that's not what mostly the local networks were showing. So during the daytime in these theaters, they would play, you know, matinees, and they were kind of targeted to kids.
Yeah.
And that's really who was these movies were intended for. And, you know, when they go to the grand openings, you see it's just a bunch of kids running around throwing fucking popcorn, jumping up, grabbing fucking vampire's titties. They're just rowdy kids. And they the audience of the time probably didn't give a shit.
Well, like I said,
it didn't cost anything to go to these movies. Yeah. It was their version of cheap TV.
It was like a nickel or something.
Yeah, and it was just like, it would be like sitting in front of the tube watching TV. So you could get away with it. It was probably wasn't as out of place looking back in the 50s as it is today.
That's what I was going to say, because I feel like I've seen other movies from the 50s.
Yeah.
Well, one, I've seen worse ones than Ed Wood movies. At least those are entertaining.
Yeah.
I've seen other good movies from the 50s where the special effects and stuff weren't much better than Ed Wood level. There wasn't a huge chasm.
Well, that dude from Arkansas that did the fucking Bigfoot movies with the Boggy Creek movies.
Yeah, yeah. Charles B. Pierce.
Yeah. His movies weren't great either. Technically, they were a lot better. And the cast and the dialogue was a lot better. But they weren't that much better
than
an Ed Wood movie. You know, they were both fucking ridiculous. Dollar for dollar, probably Ed Wood might beat him.
Depends on what mood you're in. Because sometimes... Yeah. Now, the first Boggy Creek was actually a pretty decent movie. And he also made The Town That Dreaded Sundown, the original.
That was a pretty decent one.
Except for the, you know, the comic relief cop, which he played, actually. I think they could have done without that. But Boggy Creek 2 is so awful that it goes all the way around and becomes awesome again.
Well, it's like Manos Hands of Fate.
Yeah.
Manos Hands of Fate, I think, is worse than an Ed Wood flick.
Oh, yeah.
But you just fucking laugh your ass off watching that thing. And you don't laugh so much at an Ed Wood movie.
I don't know, I do.
But not as much.
Yeah.
To me, Manos Hands of Fate is even more ridiculous.
Manos is way more
I'd rather watch Manos Hands of Fate. It's worse than Ed Wood, I think.
Manos is just so what the fuck. And if you want to talk about Ed Wood being technically incompetent, the dude that made Manos
is even more technically incompetent.
They had their camera would not do sync sound.
Yeah.
The camera would only record 30 seconds at a time, I think. So a lot of times you have these scenes where like the person that's talking, there's like a person
talking, but there's no audio.
The person that's not talking, like the other person in the conversation is on camera, but the other voice is coming from off camera. It's so bizarre.
The thing about Manos is that it's so crude and so fucked up that you kind of become kind of mesmerized.
It's kind of hypnotic.
Yeah, because it's just like, it becomes almost artistic. It's like it was done on purpose, but it wasn't.
I think that's why people still remember it and why it's one of the most... I think Mystery Science Theater had a huge, had a lot to do with that because they kind of dug out this forgotten movie and put it on there and then it kind of introduced it to a whole new audience.
Yeah.
But there is something, and Oracle just said, it has a good story buried deep, deep, deep in there. It is actually a really good idea for a story. If somebody made this with some technical competence, it might be really, really creepy. Because, you know, with the whole cult thing and all that kind of shit, you could do that and it would be really creepy. But I feel like...
Well, it was creepy.
It's even creepy the way it is, as bad as it is, just because...
It's like watching them a snuff flick.
Kinda.
Or some kind of crime scene photo.
Well, yeah,
crime scene films.
I think that when they did it on MST the first time, I think Joel summed it up like the best when he said every frame of this movie looks like someone's last known photograph.
Yeah.
That's exactly what the fucking movie looks
surreal.
Like.
It's surreal. You're not sure if you're not sure if this thing is taking the piss or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Are they serious? They can't be serious. No, I think they're serious. They're trying to pass this off as a movie. It's that kind of shit.
And some stuff I feel like it didn't translate because the first, like the character of Torgo.
Yeah, it didn't translate at all. His legs.
His legs. He just looked like he had big giant knees. He was supposed to have goat legs.
Yeah, you couldn't see that though.
But you couldn't see him because he had pants on, obviously. Yeah. But they didn't have the money to make him have goat legs.
So they stuffed his pants full of a bunch
of stuff.
And
if you had goat legs,
knees.
If you had goat legs and you were looking for victims, then yeah, you would have to wear pants over the goat legs because obviously if somebody saw some goat-legged motherfucker coming at you.
My master says. Fucking ridiculous shit.
It's a great, and Torgo. I feel so bad because that dude like committed suicide not too long after that.
Yeah, he was gay. He was gay.
Yeah, I don't know. I know some people have said, "Oh, it's because the movie was so terrible." I don't think the movie had anything to do with it.
His dad kept fucking with him about being gay.
Yeah, I think he had other emotional issues, which is like I said, it's really really sad. I actually the dude that made Manos. He's dead now, but his daughter is still on Facebook and she makes cloaks, like those black cloaks with the red hands on them. She makes those and sells them like on Etsy. She seems like a lovely person.
He's the one that told me that the guy who played Torgo was gay. His dad kept fucking with it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's why. Yeah. I knew I'd heard it from somewhere.
Yeah. I told you when I was talking to her.
But she seems.
Did
like
she try to sell me the movie? And I said, "Nah, no thanks." Because they have a remastered version. She's like, "That's must be remastered." And she, I know what she's talking about. Okay, but she thinks it's a great movie.
It's
not great in the way she thinks it is.
No, the thing about it, and you know, this comes back to Ed Wood again. It's like, his movies are terrible, but people are still talking about them and they're still entertained by them. So you can't really say that they're terrible because they're still entertaining, right? Like I said, to me, like the worst thing that a movie can be is boring.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just don't be boring. Right. If it's going to be bad, at least be so bad that people just want to like fucking get drunk and watch the shit because it's funny as hell. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So I think that that's kind of what happened with the Ed Wood ones and why they've endured, I think, is because I think to a degree, he thought that he was making a decent movie.
Well, you know what, though? They're the iconic low-budget 50s monster movie.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was thinking of that, when you think of a low-budget 50s monster movie, I would think of a certain damn vibe, and it ends up being some memories that I had of seeing growing up seeing an Ed Wood movie. Now, if you, having never seen an Ed Wood movie, will you enjoy this? Yeah, you would, because at the time I first saw this movie, I only vaguely remembered Ed Wood movies. I couldn't remember any of the stories, but I remembered the movies they were talking about.
Yeah.
Like the titles and like certain scenes, you know, like them walking through the graveyard with Tor Johnson and Vampire. I remember those.
Yeah.
But I couldn't tell you what that movie was about. So no, you don't have to see the movie, Ed Wood movies.
I'm still not even really sure what that movie is about.
The most important part of those movies and the most memorable elements in those movies are shown reenacted in this movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, all the stuff from Plan 9, like the shit with the airplane, like, you
know. Bela Lugosi fighting the octopus.
Yeah.
You know, that's shown.
That was from Bride of the Monster. Yeah.
They reenact that in this. So the most memorable shit from Ed Wood's movies is actually kind of fucking reenacted and discussed the backstory of everything. You know, it's right there in the movie. So it's good.
It's kind of fun to watch this to watch Ed Wood and then watch the actual movie so that because they're fairly accurate. I mean, they did kind of like, you know, fancy him up a little bit for the movie, but from what I remember, because I feel like I've seen Plan 9 from Outer Space probably a couple dozen times. I've seen Bride of the Monster probably about 20 times. And I've seen Glenn or Glenda a few times too. And from what I remember, the scenes are very similar.
Yeah. The portrayal of Mela Nirmi as Vampyra in the movie, it works in the movie, even though that's not the way she really was in real life. But it, like, she's kind of shown as like somebody who's not doesn't talk much and is like kind of looking down her nose at you.
Yeah, she comes off as real kind of snotty in the movie.
Snotty and doesn't speak much. That's not how she actually was, according to people that knew her. She was talkative, real, real talkative. Yeah, she really thought highly of herself, but she wouldn't shut the fuck up. She was constantly talking.
I got that impression. I saw some some interviews with her when she was older.
Right.
Like before, I think she's passed away now, but
and she did dress like a goth or goth adjacent shit. She wore fucking Chelsea, fucking shaved her head, nothing but bangs. And she was doing that in the 50s.
Yeah.
So she was a freakazoid for the 50s. She attracted a lot of attention, and then she did whatever. She was an attention whore. She loved fucking attention. And wherever she went, she was constantly talking and talking and talking and getting everybody to look at her. Very much tried to be the center of attention wherever she went. So she wasn't this kind of reclusive, solemn, fucking kind of spooky gothic. That's not the way she really was. Now, she was gorgeous in real life. You see photos.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she was.
She had a thing going on with fucking, what's his name, James Dean. And he dumped her, and she fucking stalked him for a long time. You know, the problem with Mayla is she couldn't act. She couldn't act. And, you know, so she didn't really get to, she didn't get any parts.
Yeah, I mean, she was good as a horror host.
Yeah, but she couldn't act.
And, you know. I kind of feel like when we're talking about, because the Dolores Fuller, who is played by Sarah Jessica Parker in this movie, who was Ed's girlfriend when he was writing Glenn or Glenda, they kind of, the actual Dolores Fuller, who was actually quite successful, and actually even when she was in the early 50s, when she was with Ed, she was on like the Dinah Shore show and shit like that. And then later on, she went and became like a songwriter. She wrote some shit for Elvis and whatnot. So they kind of portray her a little bit negatively in this movie. I feel like she's kind of seen a little bit of bitchy, but I feel like she's bitchy, but she's justifiably bitchy. You know what I mean? Because she does do a lot of work for him, and you know, he's not getting anywhere, so she's getting frustrated. You know, and he does write her parts and all this other kind of stuff. So I kind of feel like they did talk to the actual Dolores Fuller, and she said, "Well, that's not what I was like," but she liked the movie anyway. Yeah. She's like, even though it wasn't accurate.
Well, I think they wanted to give the characters some personalities that could play off of one another in a
way. In a cinematic. And I think she got that. She was like, you know, that's not really what I was like as a person. And that's, you know, but I really do like the whole scene where, you know, because he had cast her, he was going to cast her in, you know, in Bride of the Monster, which is called Bride of the Atom then. So she was going to be like the main character. And then he didn't have the money for the movie. So he meets this other woman, Loretta King, like in a bar or something. And he thinks, erroneously, as it turns out, that she's some kind of heiress, that she has all this money. And he's like, oh, I can talk her into, you know, funding the movie. And she's like, well, I have to be, you know, the lead role. So he's like, okay, thinking that she's going to put up like $60,000 or something like that. But then, so then like him and Dolores get into this huge fight because she was supposed to be the lead and she's like pissed off and she got relegated to the fucking file clerk part. So that whole fucking fight they had where she like throws the fucking cast iron pan at his head and shit like that, that was like super funny. And then like it turns out too that like Loretta had like $300 and that was it. Like she didn't have the money. And I've actually seen, so now I think of that scene in Ed Wood every time I see Bride of the Monster, because they reenact the scene, like the one scene where they're together. And it's just like so, so funny. I know that's probably not exactly what happened, but it's still funny. And I still love that line where he first meets her in the bar and the waiter comes and asks her if she wants anything. And she's like, no, no liquids.
Yeah.
I'm terribly allergic to them.
Yeah. You gotta have sense.
No liquids. Me and my friends used to like quote that to each other all the time. No liquids. I'm terribly allergic to them. There's just so many fucking great, God, there's just so many fucking great lines in this. And it's like when we were watching it again last night, I was just like cracking up all over again. I had forgotten how much I love this movie. But yeah, so if you haven't seen it, you really, really need to see it. And go watch some Ed Wood movies too, because those are super entertaining.
Yeah, Ed Wood, this movie, it's a masterpiece.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's so funny. It's just, it's beautiful to look at.
Say probably one of Tim Burton's best movies.
Yeah, I would argue, because I think when we were doing the Beetlejuice review, I think I said, oh, this is, you know, Beetlejuice is probably my favorite Tim Burton movie. But I don't know. Now that I'm watching Ed Wood again, I'm like,
I think Ed Wood's better than Beetlejuice.
I think Ed Wood might be my
favorite. I think it's even better than Mars Attacks. I think it's his best movie.
We need to watch Mars Attacks again. I think that's on YouTube for free.
There's just something about Ed Wood. It's just more informative, more memorable, more cultural. It's just more cultural significance, you know what I mean? Because it's talking about a guy who really lived and what his life was like and certain characters, you know, Hollywood people, Hollywood characters, what they were like. And it's just, this movie will stand the test of time.
And I really, really love, because I really love old Hollywood shit and I love, you know, like 50s.
Yeah.
you know, old 50s horror movies, and like I love the old, you know, Universal movies. So this is kind of like right in my wheelhouse, you know what I mean? Like this kind of stuff. So yeah. What? Oh, I thought you...
No, I'm taking a breath. I can't breathe.
No, you
I
can't.
can't breathe.
No, I thought you were going to say something else. You seem like you were.
Probably another one that kind of reminded me of this, just because, I don't know, the tone and it being black and white would be the Loved One.
We really
We
need
got to get
to,
that. We got
we
to
need to
do,
do that one.
yeah.
I'm gonna write it down so I can remember.
That shit's expensive to
Is
get the
it?
blood run. Yeah, I think the Blu-ray was like $40 last
So
time
it's
I saw
nowhere
it.
you can't stream it or anything? Can we stream
I
it?
want to own it.
Oh, okay.
I want to own it. That's a fucking classic.
I'm just saying, like, for review purposes,
Yeah.
maybe we could stream
And
it
it's a
someplace.
forgotten movie. People don't know that
I
one.
hadn't even heard of it, and I'm like way more into movie shit than
It's the
he is.
only movie I was able to show her. She's like, how I didn't know about this
Yeah,
movie.
it just completely
The
slipped through
movie's
the
fucking is
cracks.
goth as fuck. It's an old, early 60s, black and white
Yeah,
movie.
Jonathan
Jonathan
Winters is in it.
Winters is in
Yeah.
it. A bunch of people are in it about this girl that she's fucking, this guy meets this chick who she's just hot as shit, and she's like this weird goth chick that works in a damn cemetery, and she works she's a beautician in a mortuary.
Yeah, she like
She
makes
does
the
all the
corpses look pretty.
faces.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he gets into this relationship with her, and he ends up falling into this fucking into the funeral business in a theme park cemetery.
Yeah, it's like a dark comedy.
Yeah, and he just finds out how weird these fuckers are that run this damn cemetery. And how
It's so good.
it links in with the government and fucking the space race and fucking, which is weird shit, man. Funny. It's
It is,
good.
it's a super, it's super weird. And
Yeah.
like I said, I do kind of feel like it's forgotten
Yeah.
about because it's a very, very strange
And she
movie.
lived on that, remember, and he goes to her house, and she lived in one of those fucking Hollywood houses on the side of a fucking hill, and it's fucking teetering, getting ready to collapse and
That's right.
slide down the hill, and she's fucking swinging off the back porch, and the
Yeah.
fucking house is going, he's going, whoa, whoa. And she's totally just blissfully unaware of this fucking house falling. And then she's actually, and it turns out she's like, she kind of likes the thrill that it could fall at any minute.
Yeah.
It was just weird. Weird movie.
She's a daredevil.
Yeah.
There was a lot of weird movies back in the day that I kind of feel like are forgotten a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking, for some reason, I was just thinking of one that I watched the other day. I think it's on Tubi called Spider Baby
Yeah.
that had fucking Lon Chaney Jr. I feel like Lon Chaney Jr. was in it.
Then the head mortician lives with his mama, who's fucking super overweight. Remember, he feeds her,
Yeah, that's right.
and he was singing and shit, and singing and dancing for her and shit. Fucking, it's just weird, weird
It's a
fucking
weird
movie.
ass movie, but like
Someone,
it's a dark comedy. It's kind of
yeah,
reminded me of like Doctor Strangelove a little bit,
like
like
Doctor Strange,
that kind of vibe.
like Doctor Strangelove and fucking Ed Wood kind of mixed together,
Yeah, sorta.
sort of, yeah.
Yeah, with a little bit of Harold and Maude
Yeah.
mixed in there.
Weird.
I gotta review that one too. I love that fucking movie. There's a
I
now
might
that
look for the Loved One. We'll see if I can order it.
yeah, we'll see if we can
Last
do one
time
of
I
these
saw it,
up.
they wanted $40 for that thing because it's a rare movie.
Yeah, because like I said, it's like it seems like you don't really hear that many
Just
people talking about
forgotten.
it
It's a
anymore,
forgotten flick.
which is kind of sad because it
Real
was
high
really
budget movie, and
awesome.
it's looking really well written.
Yeah. Oh well, what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
Maybe we can bring it back into prominence
Yeah.
one of these days.
I
We'll
doubt it. Not with
find out.
10,000 followers. 1 million, maybe. We have
Yeah,
a
but
million
if every
subs.
single one of those 10,000
And just
followers
spreads
told
it.
somebody else about
Watch
it,
the Loved One. It
yeah.
may not have the same cultural impact on these youngsters. I don't know.
That's true. That that
They might be like, what's this
that ship
about?
may have sailed.
Yeah, that ship may have sailed.
Oh
It's
well.
just some weird shit.
All right. So I guess, man, we've been going on for more than an hour. And we
Yeah.
mostly talked about Ed Wood the whole time. I'm proud of us. All right.
A
So
show is a show.
show is a show. So
Yeah.
today's Tuesday, so tomorrow, Wednesday is the party stream.
Oh shit, yeah.
Oh shit. Why do you say it like
Gotta
that?
go get some fucking mixers.
Oh yeah. We still got booze, right?
Yeah, I need some more need some
Shit,
more
man.
coconut.
Every week we gotta go to
Yeah.
the liquor
Fuck
store.
me. Tearing my liver up. It's okay though, I could use the drink.
Yeah, actually, I could use a drink right now. It's a little bit early. It's only 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'll have a
Yeah.
drink later. All right. So we will see you guys tomorrow evening for the Wednesday party stream at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as usual. And thanks everybody for dropping by. As always, have a good rest of your day. Bye.